Hi everybody, welcome back to the Loop Podcast. My name is Jamie Skills, Senior Demand Generation Manager here at Cognizant. Delighted to be joined today by Tim Hughes, Demand Generation Lead at Cognizant. Today we're going to be talking about paid ads and how we run paid ads at Cognizant, our philosophy and how we approach it. Tim, I don't know if you want to give a quick intro to yourself and sort of like your role here, your sort of role in relation to ads and stuff, and just give everyone a quick idea of what you do day to day.
Yeah, so Tim, Demand Generation Lead. I think I'll give a brief explanation of how kind of it works in the DG team. So we're kind of split into three pods, and each pod owns the activity for a specific persona. So three pods, one that owns marketing, one pod that owns RevOps, and then another pod that owns sales. And the sales pod is the one that I'm aligned to. So yeah, that's how we're kind of structured.
Yeah, and just to add to that, so everyone is listening, I am basically working on the marketing pod. So all the stuff that goes out to like our marketing persona, our marketing audience, that's where I'm focused at the moment. So I suppose a good place for us to start in terms of ads, because I suppose we've spent literally the last year of our lives working on ads. I suppose a good place to start is like maybe how the teams work together, because we've got quite a big set up here, because obviously we've got the DG team that we've just mentioned, but then we've also got our paid acquisition team. So maybe do you want to give like a quick sort of explanation of like how we work together with the teams and sort of what our process looks like? Just an insight.
Yeah, so I think we're still working on this as like a wider team, so DG and paid, but it's definitely going in the right direction. I think in a perfect world, and we're not too far off that world right now, but the paid team essentially own the performance side of things, and the DG team own the execution. But then the really important thing is that then both teams are aligned on the overall strategy and goals of the campaign. So it's very much DG and pay team working together at the start to look at what the campaign is, what the messaging is, what the target, who the target audience is, what the goal of the campaign is, and then it's almost DG's responsibility to go away, ideate and create the ads, messaging and landing pages, to then give to the pay team to execute. But as I said, the most important part is then that feedback loop between DG and paid. Obviously, the paid team are in LinkedIn, Google, Reddit platforms every day, so they know what works and what doesn't, which means they need to be kind of really proactive in their feedback to then help the DG team optimize campaigns going forward. And as I said, I think our process isn't too far away from that, which is really good.
Yeah, I think it's probably important to mention that in terms of like our ads and like our setup, it's quite sophisticated relative to like some other companies, even of our size still, actually, just because it's been a core part of our strategy for the last few years. So we have a lot of campaigns, a lot spread across a lot of different channels. And so I think it's been really important for us to have the two teams split out, just because of the volume of ads and the volume of campaigns that we have running, the budget behind those as well. I think basically splitting those out and letting the pay team specialize in one area and then letting the DG team specialize in another area, where obviously we're focused a lot on the creative, the messaging, all that stuff. That's definitely helped, because I don't think we could do it all if there was just one team on it, just by the nature of our ad account. So that's one of the reasons we've got sort of to where we are. But yeah, I suppose that is pretty much how we work at the moment. We've got a lot of like boards and stuff set up in Asana, and we've got a lot of things to sort of help manage it and help try and automate the process as much as possible. But I suppose that is pretty much everything. I don't think there's anything really to add today, Tim, how we work together.
No, I wouldn't say so. No.
Yeah. Cool. Should we just dive into maybe our strategy and how we set things up in the accounts? Maybe look at like, I suppose we can talk about our bucket setup, talk about sort of how we set up our objectives, and then how we measure the ads with those objectives as well. So I suppose, do you want to give everyone a quick intro? People might have seen this if they've watched the Loop Live previously, have watched our previous events, sort of like how we approach content and how we structured the account for content and basically the bucket setup we've currently got.
Yeah, so I think when you look at our kind of general strategy, our overall strategy and our whole philosophy, it's to provide our target audience with great content, friction-free in the places we know they hang out, whether that's LinkedIn, Google or Reddit. I think the traditional marketing playbook was to provide your audience with different content types at the stages of the funnel that they're in. So obviously you've got your good old awareness, consideration and decision stage. So if they're in that consideration stage, you're only showing them social proof and testimonials, or if they're in the decision stage, you're only showing them product brochures and stuff like that. But the reality is this, it's not how buyers operate. They don't work in such a linear way. So that's why we kind of show our audience a mix of content at all times, whether that's a tactical content asset, testimonials, product features. We want to give them all of our content at all times. And because of this, we then split it into different buckets. So we have our content bucket. So these are tactical assets that always have a dotted line back into our product. So we obviously sell mobile data, which means we create a lot of content to our sales audience around cold calling. We also sell email data. So a lot of our stuff that we push to our marketing audience is email nurture tips. We also then have a thought leadership bucket. This is basically just serving our unique point of view, or some kind of overarching strategic initiative that you want to share with the market. Social proof is obviously all your testimonials, what people are saying about you on dark social. And then finally, we have product. And this is obviously product focused messaging. So you can really kind of raise awareness of the different product features that you have to offer.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, the bucket setup, actually, because I feel like it's such a step change to like when you were sort of earlier in your career, and like you mentioned, basically with like how you would look at content. It's like, well, if someone's seen this, now they're now ready for this. They've seen my checklist, ebook, white paper, whatever bit of content you want to sort of like insert from 2012. Mm-hmm. It's like, now they're ready to see like this case study. And then if they see this case study, then I'm ready to retarget them. And like, it can, I think in general as well, it tends to over-engineer the whole thing.
100%.
Sort of tying yourself up in knots. And I've definitely, like, at some point in my career, like, thought like that. So, like, it's definitely not unusual.
Yeah.
But I think what, like Tim said, is important about the bucket setup is that, like, it's, like, by no means, like, saying that, like, you have to adopt this. But, like, what it does do is, like, it defines, like, 4 or 5 key buckets of content. So, like Tim said, content, thought leadership, social proof, product, the essential pieces of information that your market needs to know to become aware of you and then to buy. And then it helps you sort of organize that in quite a logical way rather than sort of like trying to sort of force it into like this funnel steps kind of thing.
Yeah, well, you just never know what where people are in their journey. Obviously, I know there's loads of systems now which will show you how intent an account is and stuff, but you are never going to know what where an exact person is in their buying decision. So you can serve someone product one day, someone content the next day, like it won't really matter. Like, that's why we just always say serve them always friction free, all types of content. Yeah,
makes it easier, to be honest, because when you think of it like that, we just give everyone everything all the time rather than trying to come up with like a complex flow. I actually found that so much better. And it works better in our experience anyway. But yeah, that's kind of the bucket setup. I suppose what we can probably move on to then is, within the buckets, how are we setting objectives for the content in those buckets? So I don't know if you want to do a quick, probably the best way to do it is a quick run through of each bucket and sort of the objectives that are attached and what we optimize for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you look at, so if you're looking in platform, so if we take LinkedIn, for instance, so we have product and social proof campaigns. They are set on a reach objective. So if you do have campaigns that sit in a reach objective, you want to then be looking at engagement rate and the number of impressions first cost per result. So if your impressions are low and your CPR is high, then it means that your ad isn't being consumed in the feed very well. And for a campaign with a reach objective, you obviously want people consuming the ad in feed. For our content buckets, we have a traffic objective, and then we also have a demo remarketing bucket, which has a conversion objective. For both of these buckets, you're looking at click-through rate and also clicks to landing page. I'd say click-through rate is obviously key for content, but a lot of people measure conversion campaigns solely on click-through rate, as well as conversions. But what you should also be measuring in conversion campaigns is the landing page performance. If a demo conversion ad has a great click-through rate but not many conversions, it's likely an issue with the landing page, not the creative. So for these kind of campaigns, you need to be thinking of success a little bit more holistically.
Yeah, I think it's a good point about the remarketing thing and the landing pages, because I think there's such a temptation just sort of when you're like in a bit of a flow and you kind of just automatically jump to, okay, well, the ads aren't working, we need new ads.
Oh, and yeah.
There's nothing wrong with the ads. It's not the ads, it's the journey, it's all the stuff that comes with it. But it's just a natural thing sometimes when people are reviewing performance and they look in those metrics, and then all of a sudden it's like, right, we need a new set of ads.
Yeah, 100%. Like with your reach objectives, so your products and social proof, for us anyway, it's quite easy to just see it in platform. It's your engagement rate and your impressions versus cost per result. But then for your traffic and conversion ones, yeah, like you are just, it can be easy to go from a traffic campaign, reviewing that, looking at the click-through rate and being like, right, that's not working very well. Then go to your demo conversion bucket and you're also looking at conversion rate there. It's easy to be like, this ad isn't performing. Click-through rate's low, but then you could then actually look at the conversions and it's loads of conversions, but that's actually due to the landing page, not the ad itself.
It's a good point. And it's also a similar story for like content. Like when we're doing the content ads and we're trying to drive people towards like top of the funnel assets, like I think sometimes if you see like an ad's working really well, you can kind of be tempted to sort of like leave it at that. But like really, like best practice, you should be looking at like the actual page and like the asset you're sending them to. Like, are people actually spending time on that page? Are they reading it? Like, are you getting good feedback about it? All that stuff should help inform it as well. So I think that's a really good point, actually. It's like, especially with any ad really, where especially when you're driving them off of the feed, like definitely you have to be examining that journey to know fully if the ad's working or not. It's not always an end platform thing, but cool. I think that's pretty much all of the buckets we run in terms of like the objectives. In terms of measurement, it's pretty obvious. We've got the engagement rate for anything that's in feed, plus sort of like our cost per result against impressions. For our traffic ads, we've got CTR, and then obviously you can be on page metrics as well, but how that's performing. Same for a demo, but that will be more conversion based as well. Cool. I think the next thing I wanted to quickly jump on was we've talked a bit about our general setup for like sort of our always on campaigns. So when we say always on, these are the campaigns, the ad campaigns that we run like 24/7 all year round. They're just constantly putting that content that we mentioned, those buckets of content, out to our audience. So we're constantly getting in front of our audience, serving the right content to them, and basically doing that in a friction-free, ungated way. I kind of wanted to just quickly touch on ABM. So in terms of our always-on campaigns versus when we run ABM campaigns for specific accounts or maybe specific verticals, I suppose, what would you say in your experience has been sort of difference in your approach to those campaigns? Either in the creatives or sort of just your sort of thought process for planning those out. Is there anything you've got to sort of, you've come across in your experience of running those?
Yeah. So whether you're running one-to-one campaigns to a specific account or one-to-many campaign to a specific industry, your ads need to be highly personalized. So whether that's personalizing the creative for the company or then creating specific content that then resonates with the company, which can help them in their day-to-day. But obviously we've only been testing ABM ads fairly recently, but one of the biggest insights that we found is calling out the company in the actual creatives, so using their logo. So like, hey company X, check out these 17 cold calling openers, and adding their logo in the creative is really simple, but it's much more effective than calling the company out in the ad copy, because when they're scrolling through LinkedIn and they see their company logo, they'll instantly stop because it's a familiar logo. And no one, they'll be intrigued to know why their logo is being used and is on that, why it's there. So yeah, it will instantly stop the scroll. But I think the second thing, which we've seen loads of success with, is personalized video ads from the specific sales rep. So this might be the sales rep giving the company a personalized demo of our platform, or explaining the company, explaining to the company why they should use Cognizant and how it helps them achieve their specific company goals. Ultimately, what you want to do is, it's really important that first 10 seconds of the video, because that's where you capture the attention. So you need to call out the company name, show you know what their company goals are, and then how your solution can help hit their goals. So yeah, I'd say that first one with adding the company name or the company logo into your creative is really simple, but it's really effective. And I think then just personalizing videos. So we did a side-by-side comparison. We created a bunch of specific demo videos for the account, and then just added in our always-on videos and the specific demo videos, because we were calling out the company name. The sales rep was calling out the company name. We had the company name on the template of the video. I think it performed like 200% better than the generic one. And like I said earlier, it all comes down to personalization. And it's got to be highly personalized and relevant.
Yeah, definitely. I think your account research goes so much, it goes so far when you actually start getting into these, like the more you know about the account, really specific stuff. Because I think, again, getting beyond just the ad, like you were talking about, once you get onto the landing page, you kind of start expanding into sort of like how you can serve that specific account. If you can really understand their challenges and really understand the value you provide in a very specific way, like that's a really powerful driver. But that can only come if you actually understand the account. So the account research is really, really important. Doesn't mean you've got to spend like days on it, but like if you can sort of be efficient with your time and look in the right places, you can learn a lot about the account in quite a short space of time. Mm-hmm. I feel like the bar is pretty low. Like, do you know what I mean? Like in B2B, like there's a lot of really bad ABM, like you can see. I'm not calling anyone out in particular, but you do see it. So I feel like even just that little bit of time spent, sort of spending the time trying to learn about them, their challenges, like what they're going through, what their company goals are, like that can go a long way, because a lot of companies still don't even do like that kind of requisite level of sort of diligence, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think another thing that we've learned is don't over-engineer it, don't overthink it, and don't like go too narrow with your messaging. So I think previously what we've done is we've kind of maybe listened to a gong call and found a specific use case out for a specific persona, and we've just gone and dived straight into that. So like with our ABM activity, we're targeting massive accounts. But we were then collecting information from maybe one small business unit and kind of leaning and, yeah, going straight in and using that as the use case. But what we've then got to appreciate is that's just one use case in a specific business unit. And now how we're kind of operating is now, how does our, rather than highlighting how a specific feature can help a specific business unit, it's more so, here's our solution. So here's how our features all come together to provide you with a solution that will ultimately help you hit your strategic company goals, rather than, yeah, like I was saying, one small feature can help a small business unit achieve that business unit's goals.
Yeah, I think it sounds obvious now you're saying it, because obviously we've talked about this like a lot in the last few days particularly, but like it's you're obviously dealing with accounts that can be like 50, 60, 70,000 people, and then you see something that gives you an insight and you're like, oh, that's the way in, but then you're like, actually, that's the way in for like five people. So yeah, I think that's a really good point. Like, you shouldn't go too narrow. Like, do your research, try and figure out what the company is driving towards and what you can sort of appeal to in sort of a broader sense, and then once you get those initial bites, there's specific people that then become interested, you can follow up in a much more tailored way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's a really good point. And it's definitely something I think we're taking forward for our ABM campaigns. Cool. I think a good place to sort of move on to then is what makes ads work, basically. What do we think makes ads work, and sort of the psychology behind it? I don't know, Tim, I don't know if it's actually going to be easy for you to explain, but I always think the semiotics thing is interesting and something new. I don't know if you can do that without a slide, because we've done it on events before, but I feel like it could be interesting for people listening.
Yeah, so I think whenever I explain it, when I explained it on the loop the other week, it was a lot easier when I had the image there, because it almost brought it to life. But essentially, semiotics is just how we interpret signs, symbols and images. And it's very much like you could have an advertisement and all it is an image with a little bit of text, and essentially the image just tells the story. So I can look at an image, I can look at an ad, and just by looking at the image, I know exactly what the ad's about, what it's trying to tell me. So one example that I've used before is the lollipop brand, can't remember its name, but
what are they called? It's like Jubbards.
But it was promoting a sugar-free lollipop, and it was basically had an image of the sugar-free lollipop and then ants going across it, but the ants were moving away from the sugar-free lollipop, because obviously ants are attracted to sugar, but that's what they were trying to show. It's a sugar-free lollipop. And I just thought, without even knowing, I didn't even need to read any text, I knew what they were promoting. You just put two and two together. I just think it's just a really clever way of telling a story, because you look at ads nowadays and they've just got so much text over them. They all look the same. And I just think it's a great way to break the noise.
I think it's really interesting, to be fair, because I think it's just an interesting, like, I think it's something you intuitively kind of know when you're, like, for example, you're putting an ad, before you'd ever mention semiotics to me, like, when you're putting an ad together, like, when you're trying to sort of, like, connect the visual, like, to what you're trying to communicate, like, it's kind of, like, that kind of puts a name to it. So I think it's an interesting thing for people to think about, and, like, sort of naming that will be helpful. I think to carry on, in terms of, like, psychologically what I think works as well, to add to Tim's point, I think emotion's a really big point. Ultimately, like, you're not trying to make people cry with your ads. Like, there are some ads that have, like, been made to try and do that, like, maybe in more B2C realms. But, like, in a B2B ad, you're not trying to bring people to tears. But what you can do is drive some kind of emotional response, because if you drive an emotional response, it leads to action more often than not. It gives it, and also it makes it more memorable. So I think one thing that we've talked about a lot at Cognizant is we leverage humor a lot. That tends to be one of the key emotions we kind of use in our ads to sort of catch people, hook them, get them to drive towards action, and also just make the ad memorable. And I think you can kind of see it play out in our ad account for a lot of, particularly when we're trying to get, I think in feed particularly it works well. When you're trying to communicate a message in feed, humor can be really, really effective. But I think, yeah, Tim, I mean, you've done a lot of this, to be fair, over the last year or two, so I suppose you would probably agree.
Yeah, I think when people are scrolling on their phones on LinkedIn, people will likely see an image before the text, or they'll basically conceptualize an image before they want to read text. I think it's just a human response that we're instantly attracted to an image more than the text. So yeah, if you can use an image that tells a story without them having to read or conceptualize the rest of the ad, then I think you're doing a really good job. And as you were saying, that using images to then go and recreate memes works really well too, because obviously memes are a lighthearted way to get your point across without, like, shoving the product down your audience's throat. Like, it's giving it in a lighthearted way. And again, it's just creating that top of mind awareness and a memorable experience. It's like, oh, Cognizant, yeah, I saw a really cool ad from them. And then it just a little thing like that, it's just so powerful in staying, yeah, helping you stay in top of mind.
Yeah, I suppose all those little touches, that's what it's about, like little touches that add up over time.
Yeah,
that's what we're trying to do anyway when we build the ads out. I think there's one other thing I think I wanted to touch on, actually, in terms of, like, what kind of drives success for ads, mm-hmm, at, like, a psychological level, and that's, like, there are tons of, like, cognitive biases that, like, we can lean into, but I think, like, the simplest one is, like, the idea of social proof and perceived value is just like, to me, in my mind, I found it's the most like important, particularly with things like content, can be so important for hooking people in. Like if you're doing like an ad around, I'm just trying to think of an example. So you're doing an ad around, like you're trying to drive people towards a swipe file of like emails or something like that, like leading with results. And if they're very good results, 9 times out of 10 will work. It will hook attention. It's just something in the brain that sort of kind of works and seems to work well.
Yeah. And that's something that's taken from the B2C world. Like if I remember when I was younger, you know, when you're like 18, 19, everyone wants a quick fix in everything in life. Like, oh, I need to lose weight. And then you might see something on YouTube, like a YouTube ad, like, oh, get 6-pack abs in 2 weeks. And you're like, yes, I'm going to click on that. It's like everyone wants a quick fix, something that's going to like get them instant results. And this is going against, obviously, and that's what we obviously then try and do in our ads. It's just like, oh, 7 cold calling scripts that will help you generate 50 million because that's what we use. We use these scripts and we generated 50 million in ARR. Like it's a catchy headline and it's like, oh, they must be good because they've got a tangible value to it. And yeah, I just think it's things like that, like almost like people want that quick fix. So if we can then give them something like that, it just works really well.
I think that's such a good point, like relating it back to B2C, to be fair, because you see it all the time.
Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, it's
like weight loss thing.
Yeah. The weight loss thing. It's like, oh, and then that's when the whole kind of, the influencer type thing has started now in B2B. Like it's slowly kind of going away now in B2C, but it's only just started in B2B where it's just like people will promote these products and then they'll ask like, oh, because XYZ buys this product, I need to get it too. And it's just like, if you're working with a well-known influencer in the B2B space or you're showing them on your ads, again, it just gives you that kind of social proof and authority that, right, you obviously know what you're talking about. And it goes back to those swipe files. Like if you've generated these results, it's obviously going to be good because you've got those results. So it just gives it that authority as well.
Yeah. So I suppose to recap then, just 3 points people could take away there actually. First one was basically in terms of semiotics, like use the imagery to tell a story and to clearly communicate like what the idea you're trying to get across. Drive emotion in your ads, like try and drive an emotional response, like whether that's humor, whether that's like some sort of pain or, but like try and drive an emotional response because that's what's going to like make it turn a needle. And then thirdly, also leverage social proof, leverage results, leverage perceived value. Like that stuff will be your friend and that's going to help you. So yeah, highly recommend that, guys. That's what we kind of try and use every day. So would recommend trying to leverage that in your own ads. I suppose actually just touching on the B2C point again, is there anything else that you found when you're building ads for Cognizant that's transferable from B2C to B2B?
So I think B2B ads are notoriously quite boring. Whereas your B2C ads, especially, you know, your commercial type ads, the ones that you see in the Super Bowl from like Dunkin' Donuts, like they're entertaining and they're funny. Like regardless if you need the product, the commercial stands out in your head. And that's like what great marketing is about. Marketing is all about creating memorable experiences. And again, I think B2C companies and B2C ads do this really well. Like people buy into the brand first, and the concepts that B2C companies use in their advertisements are really good for brand building. And that's something that then we take into our ads. So again, like I use the term edutainment. So you're entertaining the audience, but you're educating them at the same time. And I think that is really powerful in helping kind of drive drive brand identity.
I think for me, like a much more basic level, like I think what I find useful from more like direct to consumer stuff, just designs, to be honest. Like, do you know what I mean? Like in terms of like there are so many like ad libraries and stuff out there for like, I mean, like you can even just go on the Facebook ad library if you look like a basic level, but then you've got like all these mad tools now, like Foreplay, Magic Brief, and there's all these things you can go and like, you can go through like D2C's brands and find so many ideas for ads. And like, even though the messaging's not the same and like you might not write in the same way and there's different like approaches you're going to take, like a lot of those sort of frameworks for ads that they use are still applicable to us. So like us versus them, before and after, feature call outs can still be relevant for B2B. There's tons of them. I can't even remember them. You can go into those platforms and literally filter for them. But I think that's quite a useful thing for me day to day sometimes, is like just look and like, do you know like the ad professor on LinkedIn?
I was literally just gonna say, if you don't already, like not to you but just to the audience, like if you don't already, like go follow the ad professor on LinkedIn. Like he collects great B2B and B2C ads and post them every week. So again, like, can you use these concepts from these ads and then adapt them to make them your own? Yeah, like it was a really good shout.
Yeah, I've 100% adapted some from the ad professor before. When I'm, especially when I've been like in need of ideas, just quickly log onto his LinkedIn or like onto his, like I've got his newsletter as well, just go scroll through them and see if there's any good ideas that I could sort of make work for us. But yeah, again, I'd highly recommend following him. Yeah, I think to be fair, that's a really good point actually, is just trying to leverage all that stuff can be helpful. So I think, what were we, 31 minutes in, I've got one question probably just for us to finish off on, which is quite a fun one, actually. I suppose we've both been here, what, roughly 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
Roughly, maybe a bit more. What would you say the favourite ad you've made for Cognizant?
So I'd say my one of my favourites has been the free leads versus Amazon gift card ad. And the reason for that is I think the asset that you offer in your ads has to be great. The offer that you're, in my opinion, the offer that you're promoting is more important than the creative. Like, your creative can be amazing, but if your offer isn't going to help your audience, then I don't think you'll ever see success. Like, I see so many nice ads and the offer is book a call and get an Amazon gift card. Like, decision makers, prospects, they don't want a gift card. They want something tangible that actually benefits them and is worthwhile enough for them to reach out and actually speak to your sales team. But the creative then just helps amplify the offer better. I think, yeah, the offer that you're promoting has to be really good and it needs to be worthwhile enough for the audience to click through and claim it. And for the Amazon gift card versus free leads ad, we made the big thing about forget the Amazon gift card, like get a free data sample instead. So we're actually giving the audience something useful for free. That will then help them in their day-to-day and help them get closer to their goals. And obviously, like, calling out the gimmick of, like, forget about the Amazon gift card. Like, everyone else is doing that. It's not worthwhile. It was a bit funny because it was almost like mocking people that are doing it. And, yeah, I just think it resonated really well with the audience and it was quite timely because we published it at a time when a lot of it started getting loads of traction on LinkedIn, the whole Amazon gift card. So, and it performed really well. And it's still performing okay. So,
yeah, that's what I mean. It's still going now and like it still performs, which is like mad to think about. Like, it's been going for so long. But like, I think as well with that graphic, because obviously you've got like the broken gift card, like you said earlier, to be honest, with the semiotic stuff, like it just communicates it perfectly.
Yeah.
I suppose that's a good point as well. It's like, if you can hop on a trend like that and like give something opposition as well, like there's a lot of things it touches on to capture attention. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a great ad, to be fair. I think if I was to pull one out from the last 2 years that I've worked on, just because it made me laugh, was the one we did with Liam, where we used his blooper as the opening. So for everyone listening, to give context, we basically created a video ad where we used our VP of marketing, Liam, as the hook for the video. And basically it's him doing a traditional opening for a video, and then he messes up and he swears, And we bleep over him swearing and basically point down with an arrow and just say, this is Liam. He was going to explain how Cognizant works, but we didn't get that far. And then we move into like a an ad that talks about how we can help marketers, basically. But that's just because it made me laugh more than anything. I just like Liam in that video.
And a great, I think the good thing it was, it wasn't planned really. Like, because we had that filming day, didn't we? And it wasn't actually planned. It was just like Liam kept messing up, and it's like, let's go through all the blooper reel. It's just like, oh no, this is actually going to be a good video.
Yeah, and it's just funny because we know Liam as well. But yeah, cool. Yeah, I think that's pretty much everything for today, to be fair then. Tim, thanks for joining us on The Loop, mate. Appreciate it. We'll be back very soon with our next episode. Thanks everyone who's tuning in, and we'll see you soon.